Welcome to Day Zero Update for May 31st, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victorio.
And yeah, we've got a busy week of news. A bunch of things have been happening, especially because there are like at least 20 showcases happening over the week ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Covering every single little niche you could think of. But there are a few big ones that are happening. So we are kind of getting some of these announcements as part of showcases that happened last week, as well as just people getting news out there ahead of those other ones that are happening. We have one for Dragon Quest that could have just been an email, I guess. It was very short and very, let's say, not newsworthy that much. There wasn't really that much shown. That could have just been a trailer that was dropped. But we'll get to that stuff and a bunch of other things that have been happening here. Before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I have been playing some 007 First Light, the first new non-Hitman game that IO Interactive has put out in quite a long time. Probably at least, like 12, 13 years at least. Since maybe the second Kane and Lynch game. Maybe even one after that. But yeah, they've been primarily working on the Hitman World of Assassination trilogy over the last decade, and have now put out a new game that kind of combines a lot of the things they've learned from Hitman to build out this new kind of origin story for a new Bond that I would say combines a lot of the cool stuff about Hitman with Uncharted and kind of some new ideas on top of that. And so, yeah, where I'm at is essentially I've finished up the whole big sequence that was covered in the State of Play. There's a lot more that goes on beyond just what was shown there. But yeah, you kind of go through an early mission, which is essentially Bond in his Royal Navy days, where they are on this helicopter going by Iceland, and they get shut down. He ends up being the only one that survives and kind of gets to finding out that this was an MI6 sort of operation on this island, investigating something, and these like secrets paramilitary group has taken over and, you know, either killed or rounded up the various people that were working here before you show up. And you kind of get guided along by a handler from MI6, who's sort of brought in through this whole encampment that all this is in. And you kind of are kept at bay as to what exactly the nature of this whole thing is. But you find out there are a bunch of bombs all over this place because they were essentially would investigate whatever was here and then blow it up if they needed to. And Bond ends up with the detonator. Kind of on his way out, he blows it up to, you know, get back at the PMCs that are threatening them. Manages to survive, but along the way, you know, gets his face cut up. And kind of gets recruited into MI6 there, kind of restarting the 00 program, and kind of goes through this really well done tutorial montage sequence as he's sort of getting trained up by two of the other recruits, and you get like little bits of combat, little bits of gunplay, little bits of driving, a little bit of, you know, climbing around these obstacle courses and all this. And it does it in a really kind of snappy way that makes it a really, really striking kind of way of introducing the all of these elements of the game to you in a way that, you know, most of the games just throw you through what is essentially a boring tutorial obstacle course of teaching you how to, you know, crouch and crawl under stuff and climb over things and do all this other stuff. And this just kind of gets you the very basics and will introduce anything else as you go along. And kind of you get through this whole training sequence, kind of becoming friends with the people that were not happy to be training you. But then you kind of get to go out on a big training mission with everybody, which ends up at a big bar that kind of feels like the bar mission in, I think it's Hitman 3. There's like a big rave dance bar thing that you kind of go to, but this is more contained than that, which is where you kind of are going on this mission to where you thought you were going to go, you know, just have a night off, but you kind of get pulled into another mission that has you investigating this one guy who seems to potentially be sending information to, you know, the wrong kind of person that works as part of the government. So you eventually find out that that person was working with somebody that is connected to the former 009 who's gone missing for the past 10 years. And they're kind of trying to figure out, like, what's up with this guy? Is he want to come back into the fold, or is he trying to, you know, get back at us? And, you know, that's where you go from that mission to the one that is the state of play, like this big mansion, like hotel mansion kind of thing that is hosting a big chess tournament. And you and your handlers and your buddies are all given roles to be there, and of course Bond, because he's been kind of screwing around, is given the chauffeur role, and he kind of notices this baggage handler that seems to be tossing somebody's, you know, clothes out into the trash in a way that gets his attention, and, you know, figures out that he's tied into all of this, as everybody else is trying to figure out when 009 or somebody else of notes would show up. You kind of get this opportunity to go explore, take your way into the mission, into the mansion, and then there kind of keep track of the trail of this guy. Which it feels like the Paris mission at the start of Hitman 1, where you kind of have this big space to explore. It's not as big of an exterior location, but you do have, I think, more going on inside than in Paris. You can even find your teammates who, some of which are just going to report you immediately to your superiors and all that. So you can try to avoid them, but this is where you kind of get to use a lot of your early tools, which is like your watch has abilities to mess with electronics. And as of this mission, the other one is sort of a dart that causes them to feel sick and kind of have to wander off or something. And you can also just kind of physically tamper with things that will get the attention of guards and other people, kind of give you space to get around. And so it's a really interesting mission to, like, space to explore, especially because it's not super linear. It kind of takes you all over the place following this guy's trail. And so you kind of have a good amount of space to explore that kind of lets you try out a lot of the, because there's like a lot of verbal things that he can do as well. If you walk into a place you're not supposed to be, you can use a bluff or I forget what the other one is, but you can kind of like apologize and back off kind of thing. And that has a meter to it that you can fill up with, you know, positive things you're doing to aid your mission. And so you can kind of bluff your way through and be like, oh, I'm, you know, bringing this thing to this person. Is that okay? And, you know, get past guards that, you know, otherwise in a Hitman game, you don't really have any way of getting past them that isn't just purely either knocking them out or getting an outfit to get past them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no outfit stuff, at least so far from what I've played. So that kind of really makes you have to do this improvisation angle a lot more, and that kind of makes it a lot more of an interesting like social stealth kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of really gives it a different vibe than what like Hitman is, which is typically when you're playing Hitman, you're kind of looking at challenges and things you want to achieve during this, whereas in this, you're kind of just like, I need to figure out what's going on here and kind of figure out how to get to these different places that I need to get.
Mm-hmm.
So like some of them is like, you know, exploring and finding notes of codes that you need to enter in another place nearby, or you maybe just find a way to set off, you know, a vent that creates like a huge dust cloud that you can sneak past people in, and finding other ways to do things. That is a really kind of rewarding way to play this map.
Mm-hmm.
And from that state of play, you know, you kind of eventually find the guy, go through some stuff, and the guy escapes, and you find him. Find a vehicle to go chase after him with the help of, like a French like Secret Service agent, mm-hmm. that helps you along. You kind of go down to this airfield eventually and take out some guys on the way to, you know, eventually getting on this plane that gives you this really interesting kind of mechanic after hacking in that lets you control the angle of the plane. So mm-hmm. you're able to kind of throw in or like the boxes and vehicles and such on the plane left or right and kind of knock guards out and or knock them out of the plane entirely. Mm-hmm. And all that as you're kind of working your way through it. And where I'm at, I got through all that and kind of got on the other side where kind of the group, the department has taken losses and essentially taken like a black eye for mm-hmm. messing this all up. And now you're kind of figuring out what's next and getting some more potential equipment to take out into the field, which includes things like a smoke bomb that you can have, as well as a couple other things. And you get a really nice like Q lab to go through, where you see a bunch of people working on different things that may or may not actually be part of the campaign, but it's really neat kind of seeing them kind of be tested and go off and all that kind of fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I see people working on vehicles and weapons, and somebody's like trying to get a flamethrower to come out of the back of a BMX bike kind of thing. And, you know, like this drones with lasers on them and all this other kind of stuff that's pretty fun to see. Q himself is a pretty cool character in this. People have been describing him as Bond's gay dad, because initially when you meet him, he's like, oh, I got watches for you, and Bond tells him he's already got one, so he has to see it, just drops it in a trash can, like, you're taking one of these, making sure he's got the right tools for the trade. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a really charming game. It's got really good pace to it. Kind of keeps things moving, and it never feels like you ever really get stuck all that much in this, which is really nice. So yeah, that's what I've been playing of 007 First Light. Looking forward to putting some more time into that. I've also been playing at Mina the Hollower, which I've been enjoying, but I'm, you know, a couple hours in. I basically got through the early boss fights before it opens up.
Mm-hmm.
Explored the town you get to and doing a decent amount of things in it, but a lot of it's blocked off until I get later things. I had the fun situation of going into one of the buildings that you have to essentially put a spark in, mm-hmm. which is your life, and then dying in there and realizing like, oh, I lost my stuff because I fucked around in this like room. Mm-hmm. Four bits, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. But yeah. exploring one of these areas that I don't think I'm supposed to be in, but there's also a pretty good area for grinding out bones. Because, bones are your money. That's your currency.
Yep.
You're leveling up currency as well.
Mm-hmm.
That you get enough to upgrade one of your stats, it pops up and tells you to do it right away. Which is generally a good idea because it's going to improve your, your attack or your defense or a few other things. That'll be useful. I'm dealing with these annoying knights. I just close the distance really fast and all that's just been frustrating. I've lost a bunch of bones to them. But then I opened up alternate paths to get around, so found easier ways to get around and avoid a lot of the annoyances there, but that's been what I've been playing of that. So that seems really cool so far. And then I've been playing One Move Away. I got a code for this for the PC version. This is a game from PlayStack, publisher, and the developers Ramage Games. I think this is their first title. It is very much like a game like Unpacking, but let's call it like a prequel to that, because instead of unpacking boxes, you are packing up vehicles with all the things that you are in need of packing. Kind of really plays around with the kind of like Tetris, 3D Tetris element that packing can have with all your stuff. And it seems like it covers multiple characters. I'm on a second person at this point, and I think this is set in Italy. It's definitely in Europe, and I think the areas I've been in are specifically in Italy, from what I've been able to gather from the locales and the way they're, the way things are written and all that. But yeah, like initially you're playing this this woman who's going off to college. You're putting her stuff in the back of this kind of hatchback vehicle. The generous thing they do is that you don't really have to pay attention to the packing things with actual care. Because, in a real life situation, you would, wrap a TV in a blanket and, towels and all that kind of stuff for your more delicate things. Here you can kind of just put boxes in any orientation because, they're just boxes to me. Obviously they have things in them. You would write down what's in there and know like, oh, this one has delicate stuff. Don't stack that on the bottom. Here you just do whatever because that's kind of the point of this whole thing. You're just trying to get all this stuff jammed in here and get it ready to move. Each stage has 3 stars to earn. One that is for putting all the main stuff in. There's some extra things that are highlighted, like a greenish tint on them when you're highlighting them or looking at them. Those are an extra star if you get those in there. Well, I haven't completed any of these levels without doing at least those two. And then the third is kind of a challenge star, which like the first one, when you're doing that hatchback, it's like, don't use the passenger seat to store stuff, which was pretty easy to do. I think I did that for at least 2 or 3 of the stages at the beginning of the game. So that wasn't too complicated. And so you do have to pay attention to the boundaries of the vehicle. So if you have a hatchback with the big trunk door on the back open, you can't have things sticking out too far or else it won't close. And the nice thing it does is you can get into the vehicle in a pretty easy way to get boxes and such into like the middle of the vehicle behind the seats. It makes all that pretty easy to do. And you have... I've been playing with mouse and keyboard. You have pretty easy means for spinning the the boxes or the items around, however you need to. But they more focus on cardinal directions that you're able to turn them. But when you kind of get them in, you can kind of rub them up against things so that they will turn, you know, in diagonal directions and all that kind of stuff. It kind of makes sense the way it all works in with the physics and all that. You do have the ability to poke them. If you kind of get it's almost there and it's kind of stuck on something, you can kind of poke it to kind of push it through and kind of get more airtight kind of spacing in there, which works out pretty well. And yeah, like the later ones, like you get this girl's going off to college and then she's moving into her first apartment after college. And then from there, I think she meets a guy and he moves in. And so you have to put his stuff in with hers on a cabinet, like a display cabinet kind of thing, which has a little bit of cognitive dissonance because you see right behind you there's a closet with like plenty of space in it. So it's like some of the stuff could easily go in here. And I would say there's some details like the cardboard boxes seem more modern in design because they have like the recycle icon on them and some other like icons on them that I associate with more modern boxes in like the age of Amazon versus seeing this kind of stuff in like the 80s and 90s kind of stuff. So and like packing, unpacking, you can kind of infer the story of things that are going on here. So it's like, oh, pack Dennis's items in the cabinet here. And just like, oh, she must have met somebody and now they're moving in together. You know, eventually they move into a bigger place. So you have the hatchback vehicle and a trailer, which like the challenge is to stack everything on the trailer. I didn't initially get what that challenge was for, because it was like, put the items on the trailer. And I was like, what? That doesn't make sense. What items? It meant stack every single item on the trailer. And if you stack stuff on there, you do get a little sequence after you're done that you kind of see it, the vehicle driving, and if stuff falls off, you have to fix it, essentially. But you do have enough detail in a lot of stuff where if you have like a chair that you have set up, there is that space underneath the chair between the legs that you can stick things in there. Like you would in like a more realistic, you know, world environments where, you know, I've packed things up for a move just like that, where it's like, oh, we have the bigger furniture to put on this trailer and like pack all the other things we can under it so that can, you know, be out in the elements and pack everything else that's like smaller stuff inside the vehicle kind of thing. So they do have a lot of like challenges like that, and it doesn't take long to get to the sad stages. I think there's like 20 stages total, and I assume it's like 3 or 4 people. Because by the, I think the 5th one was where the sad stuff started happening for the first character. Whereas like packing up this your mom's suitcase, and you realize like, oh, this is like a assisted living area. And you're like, oh, packing up like photos and some puzzle books and some other things. We're like, oh, maybe she's going to a hospice or something. Like, oh, this is sad. And the annoyance with that job is that you're filling up a suitcase, which by their nature expands to fill things, but you have a strict space that is not taking advantage of that. So it's like, you know, you would tuck in, you know, an iPad in the pockets under the cover and put wires in some of the pockets and all that kind of stuff. You would spread it out for this, but the nature of the items and what the job is designed around, you don't really have that kind of nuance to filling up some of that stuff. So that's like some of the annoyances. And yeah, then you get to the second person who's sort of a young prodigy athlete who, you know, is going off to like a school just for that, for building up their athletic talents, I guess. So you pack up this truck with their belongings, and it's like a little book for trading cards, and some little like statues and all this that they've won for awards and all that, and really neat stuff. So I'm in the middle of his, I'm like 8 or 9 jobs in so far. I had one with the truck where I had to stack a bunch of furniture on it. I had to watch it drive down the road and hope all the stuff stayed in place for long enough. It's like 10 seconds maybe. And that was fun to have a bunch of this shit just keep falling off. Like, all right, I got to rearrange this shit again. It involved him having a dog now. So I had a weird thing, though, when I was like, oh, keep the dog cage like together, because it's like a top and a bottom part. And so I was like, all right, I'll put the bottom part in, put some stuff in that should be able to fit in it. And when I put the top part on to attach it, like the half of the items just phased out under it, under the bottom part. So it kept most of the items in it, but some of it was just hanging out under it. I was like, that's a little clunkier than I would have liked. But yeah, that's been very good so far. That's on everything, I think. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. $15 bucks. So if you like that kind of game, that's one to check out. And then the last game I've been playing is Dragon Quest VII Reimagined. Because when I started Hitman, or not Hitman, 007 First Light, my internet went out during the opening sequence. I didn't realize it until I got to the end of it, and it was like, we need you to download an update before you can continue playing this game. And I was like, what? My internet was not fixed by just simply restarting my router or modem or anything like that. So I had to literally just wait a couple hours for the outage to get remedied. So I figured out a game that I wanted to play that would not require an internet connection, and that ended up being Dragon Quest VII Reimagined. So I played a bunch more of that, finished up some islands, and essentially got to the point where I now have a full four-person party now. So that's been nice to kind of get some more progress in that. And I feel like I'm still fairly overleveled for where I'm at in that game, so nothing's been all that difficult. I'm pretty easily able to heal when I take any major damage, but that's pretty few and far between, mostly on boss fights that there's any real threat at this point. Otherwise, that's been pretty fun to jump back into. And that's pretty much what I've been playing this week. So how about you, Brandon?
I have been playing Mina the Hollower and one or two games that are not Mina the Hollower. Obviously, I'm still playing Splatoon 3, and I'm also sort of going through some other stuff too, but nobody gives a shit about that. They want to hear about Mina. And yeah, if you want to read my review, it is up on Smashpad. I ended up giving it a perfect 5 out of 5 because, holy shit, this game is amazing. This is a legit, like, once-in-a-generation type of title that is, like, it's just so good in just so many ways. I do not know where to start. Essentially, and I'm guessing everybody already knows this, you're playing as a little mouse woman named Mina, who has like really mad Miss Brisby energy, and she is essentially an adventurer who also is a scientist, and about 10 years or so before the game starts, her and her patron, Baron Lionel, created these devices called spark generators that let them use a chaotic element called spark to help power all the machinery and stuff in the island of Tenebrous Isle, which is where the game all takes place. And all the basically what is while she's going there, she gets a letter from Baron Lionel basically telling her that the generators are starting to fail and the spark that's leaking out is starting to deform and modify and change basically everything around it, including the people. There's a bunch of monsters and stuff running around, so she needs to get back and fix them ASAP. And she's on her trip there, and she's headed there, and then her ship that she's on gets attacked by a sea monster. Then you have to go choose your weapon, and then fight it. You're not supposed to beat it, though, obviously, because eventually it just beats the crap out of you. And the ship ends up wrecking against the rocks. And then after that, you have to make your way through a burning city that is filled with goblins and demons and what appears to be members of the Mouse Guard that, for whatever reason, have a turned tail and are attacking you on sight for some reason. Then you get to the city of Ossex, which is the capital, and everybody's basically acting that like nothing has happened. Everybody is. Just it's like completely bizarre and weird, and Mina herself is like, what the hell is going on? Why is everybody acting so strange? Then she meets up with Baron Lionel himself, and he basically tells her, look, I don't want to cause a panic, just go out and try and fix, and then afterwards I'll treat you to a nice dinner or something. Which is like very condescending, and it's like, okay, I am immediately suspicious of you. Then as you're walking out of his palace or mansion or whatever, you get attacked by Thorn. And Thorn was originally Baron Lionel's right-hand man. And for whatever reason, he's decided that to turn on him and now made it his mission to destroy all of the generators. And it's like, okay, great. It's a little complicated out of the gate, but honestly, it's the gameplay that really does it. And describing it, like, you hear a bunch of people describing this game, trying to use like a bunch of different labels. They're saying, it's a lot like Zelda, or it's a lot like Bloodborne, or it's a lot like Castlevania. It's all of those and none of those things at the same time. The overall like perspective and the way that traversal and puzzle solving works is pretty similar to a Zelda game, but like the combat on the other hand is very much like Bloodborne in that both enemies are not just something you can casually go up to and kill. You have to like think about it and learn patterns, and also the game rewards aggression, so that if you get hurt, if you manage to attack enemies, you'll slowly get your plasma back. And once you get enough plasma back, you can, use your vials. Those are your Estus flask equivalent in this game to, refill whatever amount of plasma that you've got. At the same time, however, it does have a strong Castlevania sort of thing to it, and that, among other things, the sort of strong sort of gothic horror aesthetic that it goes by, as well as the, there's just a lot of like random references. There's like candelabras everywhere that has items in them. There's bats and bat-like enemies that annoy the hell out of you. There's a lot of you having to sort of learn a bit of pattern recognition when it comes to these enemies, because you can get knocked back, and you every time you strike an enemy, you will also get knocked back a little bit from the momentum of it. So you have to think about it. Unlike basically all three of those games, except maybe Castlevania, to an extent. There's a lot of platforming involved too, and it's all like top down, and it requires you to sort of, it's going to require a little bit of practice, because the later on in the game, the platforming gets pretty crazy. But yeah, the game is just, it's so good, guys. It's so good. And one of the really cool things about it is that it, just like with Shovel Knight, it comes with like a crap ton of modifiers, so you can make the game like easier, harder, weirder, basically however you want to make it. But go out and get it right now and start playing. It's that good. So yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. So Danrab, what about you?
Yeah, not to be outdone, I have nothing but good things to say about Shovel Knight as well. Got it around the same time Brandon did, but I haven't been playing as much because I didn't have to review it. But you know, one thing that he did not mention is that the game is $20.
Yeah.
So like this game could have been 40, could have been 60. I would have been fine paying those amounts. But $20, it's a no-brainer. Yes, it is difficult, but as you said, like you know, there are a bunch of modifiers for accessibility that'll make the game a whole lot easier if you want it to be. You can make it harder too. So yeah, there's that. Again, I haven't gotten as far. I mean, I think I'm around where Chris is. The reason why I'm struggling with the game is because I'm using the hammer. The hammer is extremely hard to use. Its basic attack has not that high of a pixel range, but if you hold on the attack button, you can unleash the hammer's, you know, power that way, and it is extremely powerful, but it's also really, really slow. And then the other thing is that when you're holding on the button, you can also sort of do a dodge roll mechanic. I don't know if it's actually even dodging, but it's definitely a way to quickly go about the screen and you know avoid enemies that way.
It does actually give you a little bit of it does give you a short bit of invulnerability when you use it, kind of like with a Souls-like game. So yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, like there was I believe it was an optional enemy, just because like I had to like use some sort of currency in order to enter the door, and all of a sudden after beating this like mini boss, it gave me a trinket, you know, which obviously can be used for other buffs. But yeah, like that mini boss took me like 15 tries to get through. I don't know if like I was in the right place at the right time, but you know that's the non-linear way Mina goes about things. So there's that. But yeah, like I'm really enjoying things despite how hard it is. Like you know, don't let the Game Boy Color aesthetic fool you. Like there is definitely a lot of a challenge to be had, but the cool thing about the challenge is that it also like makes you rethink the way some of these games are made. And I haven't really had this feeling since Sea of Stars. Like for example, with Sea of Stars, you know, as far as traversal goes, games like Pokemon, games like Chrono Trigger taught you that you can't go up mountains. In Sea of Stars, you can like just jump them. And with Mina the Hollower, there are different ways to get to different places. You know, some are going to be locked at first, and that's the Castlevania aspect of stuff. But there's also the burrow mechanic, which you know allows Mina to it allows Mina to not only travel faster, but also gives her like a slight jump that you know gives her more squares to cover more ground. And yeah, like it makes you unlearn a whole lot of conventions from a lot of old school games like this, and I really enjoy that aspect of it. I am seeing like all sorts of reels on social media of people discovering different things, and it's not really a spoiler to me because at the end of the day, it's like, all right, I'm probably gonna forget how they got here anyway, and just thinking of the way that they're doing things is definitely a cool way to go about it. But yeah, I'm around 4 hours in. This is probably the kind of game that's gonna take me, you know, probably the whole year to beat because it is a little bit on the lengthy side from like I've heard 20, 30, even 40 hours to, for people to do it all, depending on how, you know, how hard you're taking it. But yeah, really enjoying that so far. The main game I'm playing right now is 007 First Light. We got our codes like on Tuesday because obviously the holiday was taking place last Monday. And yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it so far. I plan on having the reviews sometime up sometime before Summer Game Fest, hopefully. And I think I'm about 8 hours in. According to the PlayStation tracker, I'm like 40% through the game. So yeah, I think I'm doing okay so far. And I'm definitely seeing like a little bit of easiness and a little bit of difficulty. If you're somebody who's used to Uncharted, if you're somebody who's used to Hitman, there are definitely a lot of intricacies that happen in both. I think it leans a little more toward the Uncharted side. But when you're actually like slowing things down and playing with stealth mechanics, like it is far superior to Uncharted in that way. And yeah, like if you're somebody who's into 007, this might be a little bit striking just because like it is sort of a 007 origin story, but while it's an origin story, it's also taking place during current day. So you know you have things like cell phones and whatnot, and you have this watch that'll be able to give you certain abilities like making your making passers-by sick, making them go through a certain shock, whatever it may be to help your stealth. And I found that pretty awesome. Chris talked about it earlier, like the early part of the game shows how Bond was learning everything about MI6 and you know how he was able to befriend other double O's. And like, yeah, it's a really nice cast of characters that you're meeting and bonding with. And like that beginning section totally feels like a what's the word? A sizzle reel of like everything going on in the beginning. And it's good because like a lot of that stuff does come off as boring. And you know, we all know what James Bond is. We all know about, you know, the kind of tactics he goes through. But the cool thing with this one is it's very reminiscent of like a little bit of Daniel Craig and a little bit of the older 007 films where he's a little bit more quick-witted and things like that. Yeah, he definitely has some Nathan Drake about him, but at the end of the day, like this is also the kind of Bond that I'm more akin to seeing. You know, like if you look at the modern day Bond movies, like there isn't a whole lot of stealth anyway. So just being able to, you know, handle things the way you want to handle them is pretty cool. And honestly, because I don't have that much experience with the Hitman games, I'm not very good with the stealth at all. Like more often than not, I am just, you know, killing everyone that shows up, and it becomes difficult in that way, primarily because when you do die in the game, the load screen to get back in or respawn is really, really slow. I think it takes like maybe 8 seconds before you're back in action. And that really takes me out of a lot of it. But at the end of the day, I'm very satisfied with the length of each chapter and the sections of each chapter. I do like that a lot of the titles for the sections are plays off different Bond movies or references. So that's definitely pretty cool. And yeah, you can tell that IO developed this game with a lot of love. This definitely, like, you know, makes room for a sequel. I don't know how the game ends yet, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, the game is doing really well, so hopefully we continue to see more down the line. My only thing is that I wish, you know, the game so far did a little bit more, and maybe I'm not quite there yet to the point where I can just go ahead and talk about all that, but yeah. Anyway, the last game I've been playing is NBA The Run. Yesterday, for around 8 hours, they had their third beta session. But this beta was open, and it was also open to both players of the PS5 and Xbox Series X. There were issues with downloading it, like you had to actually like search the marketplaces and then go through all these like menus in order to actually find the demo. But once I got on, it was butter. I talked about the demo in previous episodes of the podcast, and I had a rough time primarily because I was playing on Steam Deck, which the game wasn't ready for. But other than that, like on PS5, it just performs really well. For those of you who haven't looked at NBA The Run or gave it a try, basically it's a 3-on-3 street basketball game, very reminiscent of that of NBA Jam or NBA Street. And every team has a player represented there. You know, obviously with the Warriors, there's Steph Curry. You have Giannis with the Milwaukee Bucks. You have Wemby with the Spurs. And yeah, they actually do have all their strengths and weaknesses. Obviously, Curry is somebody who doesn't dunk all that much, so you don't want to dunk with him. But at the end of the day, with the modes that were available, there was this breakout tournament mode where every game you play has different rules. So there'll be one game where 3 pointers are only worth one, and you have to only dunk. Or dunks are only going to be worth 1 point, and you have to shoot threes. So it's really cool to, you know, have all that mix around. And my main issue with the beta so far is the fact that, you know, I'm not knowing who I'm playing. And oftentimes, I feel like I don't know whether the people playing with me are bots or real people. Because, for example, if the object of the game is to shoot as many threes as possible, and I'm using Steph Curry, and everybody else is using LeBron or Anthony Edwards to dunk the ball when we're only scoring 1 point, we're gonna lose. So I'm like, all right, you know, we guys, we got to get back in the game somehow. So this is definitely a game where you'll want to play with friends if possible. I unfortunately have not had that opportunity, and the beta is now over. But hopefully, when the game releases in a couple of weeks, we'll be able to talk about that some more. But yeah, that's about it from me. If you don't hear me for the rest of the podcast, it's because I had something else to do. But yeah, good talks.
Yeah, so let's get to some news, and it's a new month starting up here. We have some subscription news. Particularly, we'll start for PlayStation Plus Essential. The new monthly games have been announced, and I guess they're technically having four. For this month, three new games and one from last month that they're going to have continue for a few more weeks. I think it's EA Sports FC 26 will be continuing to be available through, let's see, June 16th, it says here. So that's neat, I guess. I guess they're trying to cover over the World Cup that'll be starting soonish. So there's that. But for the rest of the games, let's see, for PS5 and PS4, Grounded, Fully Yoked Edition. This is the sort of final edition with all the updates of the sort of backyard, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids survival game. For your sort of this group of friends who's been shrunken down to the size of an ant in this backyard, and you're kind of fighting, insects and collecting materials to build a base and all this kind of stuff for getting around. And it's supposed to be a pretty good time. I didn't play too much of it when I was on Game Pass, but seemed pretty solid for that. And they do have an option for people that don't like spiders to kind of turn into something else. That's still creepy, but not spider creepy. There's that. Let's see. For PS5 and PS4, Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl 2. So if you like your Smash Brothers, but more want the Nickelodeon characters, this seems like a solid one of those. Featuring, let's see, who's on this logo here? There's Garfield, there's SpongeBob, there's Raphael, April O'Neil, Rocco, Ong, a bunch of different people here. Nigel Thornberry, because that guy's still relevant. But yeah, you get all these Nickelodeon characters and all that, so yeah. So yeah, it's got a bunch of those characters to fight with, especially on a PlayStation where there's not that many of these games to play, so that's one you can check out. And then for PS5, Warhammer 40,000 Darktide. This is Warhammer 40,000's version of Left 4 Dead. Yeah, fighting a bunch of rat creatures and other things that are swarming all over the place, so that's one you can check out as well. So that's your lineup there. I think the other thing I saw, it's part of the Days of Play stuff they're doing, is that on the 9th, when the big Destiny update goes out, there will also be a version of the all the DLC campaigns that'll be available for PlayStation Plus. I think it's extra and premium members that has everything but the two most recent like mini seasons. The Star Wars one, and I forget what the other one's called. But up through the final shape, you can play all that stuff in Destiny 2 on the 9th. So yeah, that's your lineup. Anything here you're looking to check out, Brandon?
Honestly, not really. The like I already played that All-Star Brawl game. It was all right. I'm not really interested in any four player co-op type stuff right now. And Grounded was it was okay, but it wasn't really what I was looking for in that kind of game.
Yeah. How about you, Dinner?
Yeah, I'm not going to be jumping into anything, but I did like Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl. Like, that is pretty much a Smash clone in every sense of the word, unlike PlayStation All-Stars, and that made it a good game. The only thing that it lacked was, like, the real love in there, because there was no Nickelodeon music, and I'm pretty sure the voices weren't the same. So.
Yeah, they worked with a cheaper publisher and developer, and that ends up carrying out in the full game. But yeah, those stuff that stuff will be available on the second here, so not too long. But for things that are available now, No Man's Sky has another big update called the Swarm, and yeah, the universe is going to war with this. So yeah. They have a time-limited campaign as part of this expedition against the new menace. You're unlocking the mystery of the swarm, working together with the whole community to prevent its spread and banish it from this reality. Mm. There's a new enemy force and kind of seems like focusing a lot on more space battle stuff.
Yeah.
Getting in your ship and fighting these big space battles, which is a really cool thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks like we got like new armor, new cool armor stuff for this, which almost looks like some Ratchet and Clank shit, especially the Deadlocked game. Mm-hmm. Where Ratchet's in a big weird armor suit.
Yeah.
Has the look of that. Yeah, there's a big monstrous alien starship that's been sighted with all this stuff, and yeah, it just looks like a really cool kind of event they're doing here, so that's pretty cool. I might have to jump back into that.
Mm.
So there's that to check out. And yeah, speaking of Bungie stuff, Marathon is going to be starting its second season here on June 2nd. And as part of that, they are going to be making it available to play for the week, starting on June 2nd, for people with, I think if you have Game Pass and PlayStation Plus, you can check it out for free. Mm. And it's free on Steam to check out there to kind of try it out for a week and see if you want to jump in and buy the game for that. So that should be pretty cool. It looks like they are doing some good change up here for a lot of things that are going on here. Mm-hmm. For this new season, tweaking things that probably need to be tweaked to respond to feedback since launch. Yeah, especially like the vault inventory you have is much bigger to store things, and they're going to be making some things easier to unlock and all that for people. Kind of get you into the cooler stuff early on. And they'll have a new zone to check out, which looks pretty cool. And yeah, so there's a bunch of that going on for the season. So yeah, you can check that out. And also happening this week for subscription people on Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack people, they are finally adding the N64 game people have been wanting from the start, Donkey Kong 64.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yeah.
Yay.
The most infamous Nintendo 64 game, I would
say. I'd probably say Superman 64 is probably much bigger. But as far as like a game that's like, you know, playable and, you know, actually finished. Yeah, it definitely is. This game was like, it was like the epitome of all of like Rare's excesses back then.
Yeah, it's not a terrible game. It's just not a great game.
No,
I'd say it. If there were like awards categories you were doing, like most disappointing for the year that it came out, this would easily win most disappointing.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of coming off of the Donkey Kong Country games, which are all really good. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, they're gonna do a 3D one of those, and you know, with Banjo-Kazooie, like they know how to do a good 3D platformer, that'll be cool. Mm-hmm. Then this comes out. It's just kind of this kind of confusing, super dragged out kind of collect-a-thon platformer.
Yeah.
Where you have to constantly switch between these different Kongs to collect their specific collectibles and do the specific things they're allowed to do in these different levels and just kind of make it a kind of a chore of a game.
Mm-hmm.
Was not really what a lot of people really wanted out of it.
Yeah.
And but with the passage of time and not having to, you know, try to rush through it on a rental or, you know, whatever, this being like the one N64 game you're getting for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of save state your way through this and rewind and all that kind of stuff, so make it a little easier to enjoy.
Mm.
And you know, probably just use guides to know where you need to go for things.
Mm.
To make it a little easier for that, but yeah, You can check that out on June 3rd on your Switch or Switch 2. So there you go.
Enjoy yourselves and God help you.
So yeah, there you go for that. Let's see. Yeah, we got some more things here. This is one of the remaining Nacon games that is coming out, Edge of Memories. And they have announced that they are releasing a demo for it on Steam on June 15th. So sort of in the wake of a Summer Game Fest, they're going to be putting a demo out for this action RPG kind of game that looks pretty cool from what they've shown so far. Definitely got, you know, anime style to it and all that. It does have some really nice style to it and all that, so it's looking pretty nice from what they've shown so far. So that's one to keep an eye out to try it out ahead of time. Seems like this will be the first chapter of the game. So you can check that out. It includes part of the game's first chapter and offers nearly 2 hours of content. I don't think you're going to be able to carry the save over. It's not the full opening of the game. So that's a shame, but you know, that's one that'll come out at I think later this year. But there you go. That's a thing to check out.
Yep.
And then June 19th will be when Mazelia Echoes of the Past comes out. This is a 3D Metroid-y kind of game.
Yep.
3D Metroid platformer kind of game here that looks really nice. Has kind of a Mobius art style to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be out on PC, PS5, Xbox, Switch 2 later this year, or on June 19th specifically. So that's one you can check out. That's looks really cool. The footage I saw of it looks really nice. It's kind of faster paced kind of action here as you're kind of jumping around between platformers, dashing and doing all that kind of stuff to avoid obstacles and take out enemies and all that, which looks really nice. So that's one you can check out here in a few weeks. Happening sometime in June, I think we'll have one of these showcases. Give it a date. Deer and Boy will be coming out on PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC in June. As they said, publishers Deer Villagers, developers Lifeline Game Studio, which I'm not sure, this might be their first game. But yeah, this was shown off at Summer Game Fest 2 years ago. So we might just end up getting it a date at Summer Game Fest this year. So that might be the way that turns out. Wouldn't be too huge of a surprise, and probably comes out in a few weeks.
Yeah.
That game looks really nice.
It does, actually.
Let's see, what else we got dates for? Emery Hearts is coming out September 2nd on the PC. It's sort of a voxel retro-inspired action RPG.
Yeah.
A little bit of Zelda in this, with some more kind of modern-ish kind of areas you're exploring, in a sense. Some robots and bosses and mechanical areas and all that. I don't think it's as fantasy kind of thing as Zelda is, but got some other stuff going on that looks really neat. I bet it'll come to consoles at some point later on.
Definitely.
But I don't think they've announced any plans for that just yet. But yeah, the developer is Indie Dev Hell. It's a pretty good name for indie developers. So.
Oh yeah.
There you go. Let's see here. We got Dragon Quest XI S. Whatever the full name is. Goes of an Elusive Age Definitive Edition.
Yeah. It's
finally coming to the Switch 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Switch 1 version, not so great compared to the other versions out there. So they've got a higher res, you know, full frame rates edition coming to the Switch 2 on September 24th. No upgrade path, no discounts, no save transferring options or anything. If you have it on the Switch 1, you're going to have to pay full price to play this and start over.
Yeah.
And it's on a game key card.
Yep.
So they wouldn't even pay to give you the whole game on a card.
Yeah.
Just the trifecta of Square Enix late ports. So yeah, that's one you can check out, but yeah. Might be worth waiting a bit, I guess, on a discount or something.
Yeah.
So there's your first bit of Dragon Quest news. This wasn't even part of the showcase they had. I feel like that would have been at least something. But yeah. Let's see. Then we also had Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4 that got announced. They're finally, hitting the emergency button. The
Yeah.
last Call of Duty did really poorly. They've never gone past Modern Warfare 3.
Yep.
In the original trilogy or the most recent one. And so Infinity Ward is finally hitting that button and making Modern Warfare 4. And it'll also be the first Call of Duty on the Switch too. Or any of the Switches. Yeah, PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC on October 23rd. And yeah, they'll be offering that on Nintendo's platform at some point. Yeah, they say more information about the Switch 2 version, including the launch of pre-orders, will arrive later this summer, so that might get featured at a Nintendo Direct. Because why let the people on the Switch 2 pay you money now? And you can tell them to do it during a Direct, I guess. Well, that's where that's going. I think alongside this game, they are delisting the PS4 and Xbox One versions of Warzone. So to move kind of everything up to the PS5 and Xbox Series X and S versions of that game. Because like this one is the first Call of Duty that's not coming to PS4 or Xbox One, which will be the first time since the 2012 game before those two platforms existed. Boy, that was a different world then. So yeah, so Call of Duty, it seems to be getting some positive reception so far, but we'll see when it actually comes out. But they're definitely doing the weird thing of like, we're not doing any goofy skins for multiplayer that they always say, and then put goofy skins in there when they need more attention. I think they specifically say like, we're not doing SpongeBob or Lady Gaga. It's like, okay. I mean, SpongeBob would be interesting. I don't know that they would put him in a game about shooting people in the face. But maybe I missed something previously. But yeah, there you go for that. And yeah, that's let's see, we got to, oh, I put the wrong, I spelled this wrong. BeamNG.drive, a game that's been out on Steam for ages at this point, is coming to the PS5 later this year. If you don't know this game, it is a I guess a driving game, you could call it. It's essentially a physics simulator where they, I'm trying to see when it came out originally. 2015, May 29th, 2015 is when this game came out. Still in early access. This announcement's also part of them announcing what's going to be in 0.39, version 0.39. So they're very slowly updating it, but it's essentially realistic driving game with soft body physics engine simulating every component of a vehicle in real time so that you can crash these vehicles together and it kind of crumples realistically in the way that you would expect, which is pretty cool. Sort of what Wreckfest had going for it before they decided to turn it into a real game. This is just kind of that, but they're not going to try and turn it into a real game, really. Just one that they have like a free roam mode. One offers different scenarios for driving around with other vehicles and like testing out the physics that way, as well as like some other stuff that's going on here that you can do all that. And so yeah, they announced their next update that's going to have a bunch of new things in it. new rendering tech and lighting and shadows and all the kind of graphic stuff that you would want them to be working on. But yeah, they've kind of worked on a bunch of the underlying stuff that will probably make it run pretty well on PS5. So that'd be cool to see. It's a game that I think is done pretty well, but they've never really put it on sale under, I think it's $25. It always goes on sale for $20. Maybe they've gone lower than that, but that's usually what I see it on the big Steam sales. But that seems cool. But yeah, let's see. I think one of our last things here, Fable was supposed to be coming out this year, and Xbox said, "No, sir, we're delaying it because we're afraid of GTA or whatever else is coming out this year." The way they're framing it is like they want to give it the dedicated moment it deserves, which is like we don't know if it's gonna do well amongst other bigger games. Which is certainly an interesting way for them to handle things. Because, yeah, the way they describe it here, in order to plan our game launches through the holidays in a way that works best for players, we're moving Fable to February 2027 so it can have the dedicated moment it deserves. We're excited to be giving players a major new look at Fable as well as a broader lineup at the Xbox Game Showcase on June 7th. So we'll get more of that game there. Maybe a final date. I don't know. But yeah, Fable's a game that we've really not seen much of at this point. We've
We
seen a
really
couple
haven't.
trailers and one that kind of you could say technically has gameplay in it, and then it's like in-game video of it, but it's not really pure gameplay stuff. Really. We did say that one a little late, I think earlier this year, that had a little bit of gameplay in it. More like the reaction stuff to other characters and all that. That's like a fairly classic like Fable 2, Fable 3 thing. But yeah, still really haven't seen a ton of that game elsewhere, so at least we should be getting a more concrete idea of what to expect out of this. But Fable seems to be the first game that's getting that GTA fear.
That is true. I do not I'm not surprised that a lot of companies, they're either trying to rush their stuff out before November, or they are trying to they're just like, screw it, we're gonna give it a couple months more because we don't want any of that. I mean, like, let's be completely honest. Any game that tries to release within a week, or hell, even a month of when GTA 6 releases, is going to get absolutely swamped by everything, by the momentum of GTA 6. Like, it's not just, nothing else is going to be able to measure up to it.
I mean, the only thing that's going to be is Call of Duty or Call of Duty, really.
Yeah, I mean, like normally, like I wouldn't agree with that notion, but I think like the big thing is we don't actually know how much Grand Theft Auto is. You know, there's been all sorts of like talk about it being $80, about it being more than $100, and you know, the higher it is, then you know, the least likely it is you'll be able to pick up something else, even if it does end up being Call of Duty. Because remember that one year where Call of Duty and Battlefield and Titanfall all came out within a month of each other? Yeah, like that wasn't ideal for anybody, especially EA. So yeah, you want to be able to avoid that situation. Generally, I disagree. Like, you know, I think that a lot of situations can end up like Animal Crossing and Doom coming out on the same day, but Grand Theft Auto is a different beast, so I totally get that.
Well, keep in mind that Animal Crossing and Doom came out on the same day, but that was also during quarantine.
True.
In different platforms.
So we had extenuating circumstances there. But you do raise a good point. But and the thing is, like, Rockstar themselves have been really cagey about what the price of GTA 6 is going to be, which is let's just say it's making people suspicious.
Yeah, or the people in the media are just like, well, it could be anything when it's probably just going to be $70.
Like
And
it
they'll sell
normally
an
is.
expensive deluxe edition if they want.
Yeah.
get more money from people, but yeah.
I mean, we can pretty much guarantee that it's going to sell a ton of copies just on its name alone. So,
Yeah.
you know, it's the you know, the idea is well, you know what, just we'll see all that when it comes about. But I am looking forward to GTA 6 though. So,
Yeah.
also speaking of something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, the CD Projekt Red decided let's make a new expansion for The Witcher 3,
Yep.
10 years later. To I don't know if this is going to be paid or free or whatever. I don't know if they've mentioned any of that kind of details yet, but this will be on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC, and done by the same studio that is remaking the original The Witcher.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's part of that stuff of them getting their tech stuff good for the other game they're working on.
Yeah.
So this one is called Songs of the Past. So
Yeah.
I assume that part ties into the original Witcher.
Yeah. I also wouldn't be surprised if it's going to somehow tie into The Witcher 4.
Yeah, probably somewhat.
Considering that the way that the game is looking, it's like it's going to be handing the reins over from Geralt over to Ciri. So, you know,
Yeah.
we'll see. But I'm excited because I love The Witcher and I love The Witcher 3. That is one of the best games of all time, and I am more than happy to have more to play of it.
Yeah. So yeah, this studio, Fool's Theory, is the one that made The Thaumaturge 2 years ago, which is a decent enough game.
It's all right. It's very much a niche product. Let's put it that way. Like
Yeah.
it's got a lot going for it, but it also it's like any Eastern European RPG. It's got a lot of jank to it.
Yeah. But yeah, they are working on the remake of the original game, which, they're gonna probably make it in the vein of the Witcher 3 and 4, so
Yeah, well, I
that'll be
mean,
nice.
I don't know if did any of you guys ever play the original Witcher?
It's a very weird game for its time.
It's very different. It's very different from what the next two games in the series were.
Yeah.
It's a lot more of like a, it's a lot closer to like a Dragon Age in the way that it plays.
Yeah, and it's more reliant on you switching between the swords for the different types of enemies you run into.
Yeah.
Like, doing all that putting your sword in the right kind of oil and all that kind of stuff. It was very into all of that.
Oh yeah.
But in a way that it didn't really control well for it, but it had neat ideas for it that they kind of made better in The Witcher 2 and 3.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. How they make that better for, modern audience instead of the ones in the late 2000s.
Yeah. There is it's going to be weird too, 'cause remember like one of the things that was most notorious about that game was the collectible sexual conquest cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, there you go for all that.
We'll find out what they decide to do with it. But yeah.
And then kind of the last two game announcements here, I mentioned the Dragon Quest Showcase of them celebrating the 40th anniversary of the series and all that. And we got two announcements out of that, 10 minutes long. They explained before showing off Dragon Quest 12 that they had restarted development, sort of shuffled the team working on it. So you knew, like, okay, so something obviously happened here because we haven't seen this game since they announced it ages ago. I think 2021, which was called Dragon Quest 12: The Flames of Fate, and they were very much like, this is a darker, more adult game, and you're like, what the hell does that mean with Dragon Quest? That is always kind of, you've got Akira Toriyama doing the art for it. It's very lighthearted and, cartoonish. And you got this logo that's just black and orange and all that. Well, that never happened, and it seems like because they rebooted it, we got the new version of Dragon Quest XII that is like, hey, what if we just made them like the other ones again?
Oh, yeah.
Called it Dragon Quest XII Beyond Dreams. We got a little trailer for it, and I guess this would be the first protagonist in the series that is not white. He's got some darker skin here, not super dark or anything. Because then that would probably be bad for certain kinds of audiences. But he's got a certain tired look to him that I, in my mind, keep thinking of Edward Furlong. And a little bit of look there. But yeah, then they see a little bit of the other cast here. Particularly, there's like a red-haired woman that might be a thief or something like that. Got a robot buddy, because again, Dragon Ball Z. There's got to be some quirky side character there. But then it seems like he also turns into a dragonkin at some points. He's got like a little dragon form. Yeah, that conveniently has the same armor as him and similar hair. But yeah. That's about all we know about this. I assume if it's still an action RPG is what people thought the original Final Fantasy XII was going towards.
Yeah.
That's maybe that was went back on.
Yeah.
Maybe it's closer to what we saw in like Dragon Quest VII Reimagined, where you can hit enemies on the overworld to start a fight. Maybe take them out before without having to fight them, something like that. But maybe I'll do a little more fighting on that kind of vein there. But yeah. Otherwise, it seems like it's going to be at least theme-wise probably pretty different, more like the other 11 games. So yeah, that's what that one's doing.
Yep.
But yeah, that's that one. Then they ended it by saying we've got another game coming out sooner. Because I think they said, or I don't think they set a date for Dragon Quest XII. I mean, people are maybe expecting it another year or so. I don't know. But they said they had one more coming sooner. Dragon Quest Monsters, The Withered World. That's coming to PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, Switch, and PC. Because I think the last Dragon Quest Monsters game was just Switch and PC. I don't think they brought it to the other platforms here. But yeah, this one, I think I've seen people tying into Dragon Quest V, featuring the same protagonist from that game. I guess in Japan, this one's just titled Dragon Quest Monsters 4. So there's that, and that's about it. They just kind of show the main characters, and then a bunch of art of the other monsters, and that's it. Somehow, for a game that's supposed to be coming sooner, they show less of it than Dragon Quest XII.
Yeah, this was a pretty bizarre way to just show everything. Obviously, I'm a huge Dragon Quest fan. I did post a story along with Lee, pretty much summarizing what went on along with our thoughts. And I was a little bit more down on it. You know, I personally was looking forward to a darker Dragon Quest story. But at the same time, like, it looks beautiful. You know, the footage they showed looked absolutely amazing. I am wondering if that green character actually is the protagonist in his dream form. There's been a lot of talk about that. And, you know, Dragon Quest Monsters is, you know, stealthily, like, a really, really good game, but I'm shocked they showed nothing about it other than some art. And the few characters that are there span from some of the better Dragon Quest games. Like, one of the females there is from Dragon Quest V, which is my favorite in the series. But, you know, as you stated at the start of the podcast, like, this could have been an email. I got up at 5:55 a.m., got a natural cold brew ready to talk about some Dragon Quest Day stuff, and it was just two announcements, one of which we already knew already about the delay. So a little bit disappointed there. I was expecting or hoping to see Dragon Quest 4 or 5 getting remade after, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 6, or not 6, but 7 all got that attention. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm still glad we got an update, but I wish we had more.
But yeah, that's kind of everything that got announced and got dates and all that. What are the games here, Brandon, that you're looking forward to?
Well, like I said, The Witcher that new expansion from The Witcher 3, I'm definitely looking forward to it. We really haven't seen a lot of Fable, so I would like to see more of that. That's about it, at least right now.
All right, how about you, Danner?
I mean, aside from the Dragon Quest stuff, I mean, the modern Dragon Quest stuff, not a whole lot. Deer and Boy does look interesting. And I probably will dabble into Donkey Kong 64 because that's a game that I've had trouble emulating on my Steam Deck. So it's good that we have a legit version to play there. But a lot of this stuff, especially the Fable delay, you know, it doesn't surprise me. We just talked about it. But yeah, it's really just the Dragon Quest stuff. And then Dragon Quest 11S. Funny story about that one. I actually got as far as the final boss in Dragon Quest, in the original Dragon Quest 11, and I just never beat it. And I never actually played S, so I might dabble into that one, but at the same time, I know that this one is close to 100 hours, even with the extra quest after the final boss. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so there's that stuff. Let's get to some industry news. And first up here, 007 First Light seems to be doing pretty well. They announced that within the first 24 hours, it has reached 1.5 million copies sold, which is great to see. It's had a pretty strong launch, and with all the positive word of mouth and views and all that, I imagine they'll keep selling games here for a good bit. Because there's really not much else coming out here for the next little bit here. Early June is kind of pretty slow from what I recall of the upcoming games. So yeah, they kind of got the runway here to keep selling as we get into Summer Game Fest stuff for that. So yeah, they'll have a Switch 2 version out later this summer, and that'll probably do pretty well off that word of mouth. So that's great to see. Good news for IO Interactive. Especially after that shitty game came out last year. Did nothing for them. But yeah, let's talk about shitty things. The price of the Steam OLED models has gone up by considerable amounts as they finally kind of got them into stock. And we see that the continued rising prices for RAM and various other components in a lot of electronics has also affected the Steam Deck OLED. So that the, let's see, the 512 gigabit model that was $549 is now $789, almost $800 there. And the 1 terabyte model from going up from $649 to $949, so almost $1,000. Probably will be $1,000 with tax and all that for a lot of people. And yeah, similar price increases in the other countries. Canada's paying potentially up to $1,300 for the 1 terabyte OLED, 1349, 919 euros, and 779 pounds in Great Britain, 1429 Australian dollars, and yeah, that's a lot of money. I basically went from the Steam Deck being a pretty decent purchase at $649 or $549 to if you can I don't know. No, don't buy this. This is not a really great price for this, but seems like it's still selling. I imagine from people that have the money but are freaking out about it going up even higher at some point, which is reasonable, and also suggests that Steam machine that they announced last year, that's not going to be cheap at all. If this thing is costing this much to put out, that thing is not going to be under $1,000 in any way, shape, or form. And even the Steam Frame VR headset, probably going to be a pretty penny there for that as well. So yeah, not a great time to be getting into the Steam hardware family or relying on that to be the way you get into PC gaming on your TV and all that.
Yeah, seriously.
Because the Steam Deck essentially is about what I paid to upgrade this PC, and it can play games much better than that thing can. Luckily, I have the LCD model that was like 500, 550, something. I forget what it was back then. And I even then used a bunch of discounts on like Steam credits with Christmas money and all that to knock down the price as much as I could. So this is an incredible price for the Steam Deck, and as bad of a time as there's ever been to get into that ecosystem. So yeah, sucks for Valve, but that's kind of where they're at this point. They're not immune to any of this stuff that has been going on with the consoles. So yeah, there you go. So yeah, there you go. Let's see, we got a couple more stories here. The game that nobody's talked about since the PS5's launch, Destruction All-Stars, has been delisted. And I think the multiplayer servers are already down. I think they've been having trouble with them for a while now. I feel like it's been down and up all the time for the people that have tried to play it. But they are taking the rest of the servers down so that you won't be able to play any of the modes in the game after November 25th. Seems like the ones that are up now are the single player modes. Those are just bot modes, essentially. That'll be when that's done with. So, but yeah, the game's been delisted. All the points, things you can buy are delisted as well. So you can no longer spend money on this thing. But if you have PlayStation Plus or bought it earlier, you can still check it out for the remaining time that it's playable. And yeah, that's a shame. The game was pretty solid, but just never got any attention really. It was
It
just like,
just didn't
oh.
catch on.
Yeah, played it for a couple weeks after launch for the PS5, and it's like it's pretty fun, nice little destruction derby kind of thing, and you can jump out of the vehicle and do some stuff there. That's pretty neat. And then I had other things to play instead. Just kind of how it goes. But yeah, that's a shame. But it lasted for 5 years or so, so. Pretty good run for a game that a lot of people might have forgotten existed in the first place.
Yeah, definitely.
But things that people didn't forget about, Balatro, their publisher Playstack is being sold by their parent company TrueFin to Vantage Co., who is owned by their parent company Integrated Media Company, IMC, an investment group that also currently owns Fandom, Screen Junkies, Fanatical, and GameSpot, among other things. They're one of those companies that owns a bunch of game websites and adjacent things. Fanatical's, a thing that sells a bunch of Steam codes and some other PC storefront codes as well for various games at a discount. That's unfortunate that the essentially seems like TrueFin, invested this money into PlayStack, and it got it to a pretty good place where you kind of expect any game they're publishing to be a good time. And it seems like they, have been pretty successful for that. They talked about, I think earlier this year, they've had a hit ratio of more than 85%. So I think means they've got made more than their money back on the games they're publishing most of the time. Which is generally a pretty good business there. And it seems like the owner company, TrueFin, is cashing them in, selling to this other company for probably a decent bonus on that, on top of what they have invested in. And moving on to other things. As I'm going to describe it here, we believe the disposal of PlayStack represents a milestone for TrueFin. A clear demonstration of our disciplined approach to capital allocation and value creation. We've thoroughly enjoyed working with the PlayStack team over the last few years and look forward to them achieving future success. Which is all fancy talk for we seem to be pretty good at making money, so please invest in us and we will make you more money. And PlayStack goes to somebody that wants to make even more money on top of that. They're their problem now. And so, yeah. I don't think this is going to be anything negative for the games that's Playstack is published, because I imagine most of them are owned by the developers of those games. So yeah, don't worry about who owns Balatro or Abiotic Factor, any of the other games they're publishing. Should be fine there, but yeah, who knows what this investment company is going to want out of this publisher, if they're going to start meddling in them, in their affairs and all that. So that's a shame, because yeah, they've published some of the most interesting games of the last few years. Yeah, so I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Not really. No, not really. You're pretty succinct, I think.
But let's get to some good news. The remaining workers at Rockstar Games that survived the weird layoffs for 31 people that got fired over claims of, disclosing confidential materials to other people. They formed a new union called the Rockstar Game Workers Union, as a subsidiary of the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain. They're preparing to take Rockstar to court over the firings of those 31 people, saying that more and more workers are joining from every one of Rockstar's sites across Edinburgh, London, Leeds, Lincoln, and Dundee. So they had people from some of these branches protesting for those people that were fired back when that happened. And yeah, it seems to be continuing on from that.
All right. I mean, I'm glad that they're getting unionized. I have often said and will continue to say that despite how it sometimes looks, momentum is on the side of organized labor right now. Which is one of the reasons why there's such an active campaign on the part of big business to demonize it at just about every turn, because they're getting increasingly more and more popular. And it's gonna be a struggle for them, but the fact that they have the courage to speak up and do this is enormous in and of itself.
Especially, being Rockstar Games. Like, think about it. When did Grand Theft Auto 5 come out? That's almost 2 to 3 generations ago. And while they're definitely making money hand over fist over Grand Theft Auto Online, at the same time, like, you can't be making like just this one game and all of a sudden be satisfied with just good numbers. These numbers have to be great. And while all of us can guarantee that they're going to be great, we've already seen what happens to some studios who come up with great numbers and get rid of their staff anyway. Like, that's what the industry is currently in. I've talked about this before. Unions are not foolproof, but if you have the option of joining them just to protect your own ass, you absolutely should. Like, I've also talked about this before. Like, Schreier, talked about the modern game these days costing $300 million to budget for, and that budget separated out to multiple employees making at least $100,000 to $200,000 a year can evaporate pretty quickly. And with Rockstar Games and the amount of time it's taken for this game to come out, yeah, this needs to be a hit. And them unionizing now is definitely a good move, because you never know what will happen in this industry.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. And it's nice to see some solidarity here, as they are saying here that we've always been clear that interim relief is an incredibly high bar to meet as a temporary measure before the substantive tribunal. It would have been almost unprecedented for a judge to award this to a group this size. After the Rockstar union workers previously were fired. Also saying that here, we're determined to win justice for the 31 fired workers and show studios like Rockstar that they cannot get away with this disgusting treatment of the people whose talent, skill, and creativity are what capture their audiences and generate their billions. They're in the point of gathering donations to cover legal fees necessary to make a strong case in court. To say they're fighting for pay transparency, flexible working, and an end to crunch. So yeah, that'll be it's interesting to see how that goes because yeah, if they can do this here, then
They
pretty
will set
much
a
anybody,
precedent.
yeah.
Yeah. Like you're going up against these guys are like the Goliath of the industry.
Yeah.
Like, and if you can go up against them and succeed, you've pretty much have given a blueprint for basically every other developer on the planet. So.
Yeah. That'll be fun to see. But yeah, I don't know if you have anything else to add.
Nope.
All right. So yeah, I think we're gonna end it there. But yeah, thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about as Summer Game Fest kicks off. I was looking at the list of showcases happening this week. We
There's a
have the State of
bunch.
Play on Tuesday, late afternoon. We got yeah, there's the Latin American Games Showcase, the women-led games showcase, the Accessibility Summer Showcase, the Summer Game Fest is going to be happening on Friday. For that, they'll have Day of the Devs after that. And what Saturday is Southeast Asian Games Showcase, then the Wholesome Direct, the Story Rich Showcase, the Green Game Showcase, which is funny that that came back, considering that we had some controversy going over it. So, the Future Games Show will also be happening on Saturday. Let's see, the Gaming Pride Parade. Let's see, I think that's still Saturday. And the Frosty Games Fest. Sunday has the Xbox Showcase early on, and then the PC Gamer, PC Gaming Show. And so, yeah, we'll have a bunch of that stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I forgot Pride Month starts tomorrow.
Yeah, there's a bunch of shit going on
Yeah, and
as a result. So, yeah.
Yep.
But, yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know they should check it out. And select strangers who are excited for new things getting announced. Developers finally be able to talk about what they've been working on.
And expansions coming to games that are over 10 years old.
I don't know if we'll get that here. I think it's going to be a ways off, but maybe we'll. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See you guys.